thank you very much. I am Dave Schrader. I'll be here with you for the next 2 hours. Phone lines are open. Give us a call if you'd like to talk to my guest, Bill Murphy. He's a researcher and producer of paranormal-themed documentaries that include his new pending release that investigates the origin of a haunting. His work has been licensed for broadcast on the Biography Channel, and he's appeared on the Discovery Channel, and he was the co-lead host of the hit international series Fact or Faked, The Paranormal Files on the Sci-Fi Channel. His latest documentary nearing completion is entitled The Pearl Experiment, which chronicles the successful effort to record evidence of what some people may claim to be a ghost, which was conjured through the use of custom experimental devices. You can find out more about our guest and find his other documentaries at ghosttown.tv. That's ghosttown.tv. We've got the link for it up at coasttocoastam.com, so check that out. Bill, I mentioned earlier in the show, it almost seems like the supernatural has been waiting, like the other side has been waiting to communicate with us from the start, because as soon as we develop a new piece of equipment, it seems that they're ready at the hilt to start, you know, with audio recordings. Some of the earliest audio recordings of bird sounds captured ghostly voices, recordings all along the line when phones were introduced. Phone calls from the dead became very famous. It was like the technology was finally catching up for their way to try to communicate with us. We've had experiences through televisions, through radios, through a myriad of different ways. What do you think is going on with the paranormal and technology?
Well, some of it may not be truly paranormal. It's just beyond our current level of understanding. I think we agreed on that earlier, that, you know, science has its limitations simply because people, they become entrenched and they defend their positions, and then there's a slow development of a new technology, and it sort of shatters previous beliefs. So it will continue to advance. I mean, you know, who would have thought that we'd be wearing computers on our hips, you know, more powerful than they were using in the 60s to put a man on the moon? And yet we are. We all have them. We all take it for granted. So it will continue to move forward. It's just an elusive form of energy that we're talking about that doesn't conform to any of the forces of the universe that is currently accepted. And, you know, there's just, it's the four forces. And nobody wants to say that there is a fourth force of the universe. But I believe that there could be many more forces that we don't understand and therefore don't have a way of measuring. And if these sort of communication abilities exist, what is our responsibility? What do we do with that information? Something I addressed a few years ago. If you'd like, I can bring that up really quickly.
Sure, certainly.
Okay. We talked before about Frank's box, and it's not to say that is the end-all technology by any means, but it's like, I mentioned before what happened with Operation Orchard and how I wished after the fact that I would have properly presented this and properly published it and put it out there and then see what happens next, because we've all heard what happens when, say, a famous celebrity dies, and then you have people that then say, well, I predicted that. And it's always after the fact that they predicted it. You know, it's like that's when the announcement comes out. So why not announce it beforehand and risk the embarrassment if you're wrong? Because they don't want to take that risk. So what we did is that, okay, when we looked at what happened with Operation Orchard and the unconventional way that we gathered this information, and we started the document, when I say we, a group of SWEP-tuned radio researchers, started to accumulate the information. Okay, so what is there, like a common message coming across? And lo and behold, Dave, there was. And it was kind of something that wasn't necessarily a positive message. And I said, okay, if you guys are getting this message of this very catastrophic event, let's go someplace where it can be published, and now it's forever date stamped. So it was on this show, it was on Coast to Coast, August 14th, 2009, that we went public and said, okay, here's what a group of researchers are now getting. And it's all talking about a similar event. The description could be a tidal wave or a flood could lead to loss of life on the east coast of the United States on August 15th. So George Norrie asked, the very logical question. He said, wait, August 15th, this is the 14th, and it's already the 15th. Like very soon, it's going to be the 15th, like now. So that it is East Coast time, the 15th. And what are you talking about, a tidal wave or flood? There's no big storm brewing off the East Coast of the United States. And I said, yeah, there's no year. It kept me recordings because, okay. So I totally get it why, you know, he had to sort of, you know, pause the interview there at that point, and then we continue on a slightly different track. But we did put it out there that this is the date, August 14th, and we were on the air 2009. So, you know, imagine how I kind of felt that here we made this arrangement with the show, with Coast to Coast, and they give us a date of August 14th, and the predictions we have is for the 15th. And I'm thinking we're going into the show with the disaster about to happen, with the with a prediction of a disaster, but there's no storm. I think that my greatest fear that I expressed, like a possible embarrassment, is about to happen because we're going on the day before. Well, we end the show that night, but then the next day, on August 15th, and this is when it was going to happen, a sudden storm developed off the west coast of Africa. And it became Tropical Storm Bill, which, of course, I had nothing to do with, but it was given my name. Tropical Depression Bill turned into Tropical Storm Bill, and it formed a large eye. And then the beaches around New York City were closed because it was moving up towards the United States. And what ended up happening, said this would be a loss of life. Some people went storm watching. And even though New York City was closing beaches, in Maine and some of the surrounding areas, they weren't, but they started to experience torrential rainfall. And a family that went to watch the storm, a rogue wave came up, and it swept the child that was with the parents out to sea, and the little girl was lost. It was $35 million in losses. 5,000 residents were without power. So the very prediction that we want and committed to and stuck with it, even though there was no storm, ended up playing out. And ended up happening. So the people that were doing these Frank's Boxes recordings and coming up with information, could we say that they were right? Or was it just an unhappy coincidence that the storm occurred when they said it would?
Well, there's something interesting, too, with, like, Spiracom. Here we talk about, was the other side waiting for us to catch up? What is the other side? I don't think we still have a definitive answer to what or who we're communicating with. A lot of us assume it's the dead. Could it just be a parallel universe, a parallel life that's going on, an alternate reality where we're bridging that gap? Because isn't it interesting with Spiracom, it wasn't some, ghost that was, put this tube here and da-da-da. It was a scientist on the other side communicating, telling this man how to build a piece of equipment that would make this communication easier. And I know that they've done more and more experience, the Skoll experiment out of England, which was very successful in much communication, many different very positive responses in a lot of the Skoll experiments, where they were getting these regular basis communications and things were being transmitted and information was being imprinted and pressed upon undeveloped film and unprocessed film. So it's a very interesting point to me of what are we communicating with. A lot of people are very quick to jump to the fact that it's the dead, and I think that the more research we find, as you said, it opens up this Pandora's box of more and more questions. To me, it always seems to just lend itself open to the point that I think that we're far from understanding fully, and I'm really of the mind now, from where I was 9 years ago to now, that we are maybe just communicating with something just a step to the left, and that bridge may be able to eventually be built, and communication may be a lot more accessible.
I think you're right. Because you've made several points, too. It's almost like everything we build is somehow yielding some results that are hoped for. And how is that happening? The one shared component among all of these things, though, Dave, you know, throughout history and throughout everything we've been talking about the past couple hours on the show, is that the people involved. So there's a very real human component, and the Skoll experiment was no exception, where it had to be certain people working together with a unified mindset, with the hope for a result, and thinking positive that, okay, let's do our best to see if this works. And when it's the right chemistry among personalities, then it works. You throw somebody in the mix that is not part of that working chemistry, and it falls apart, and you get no results. So we can't ignore the fact that it's somehow the people involved are impacting the outcome.
We need to take a break. If you're interested in the supernatural and paranormal and want to put yourself into the experiments, I'm going to be doing a very small gathering and event in Minnesota at the Sauk Center Palmer House Hotel in mid-July with paranormal inventor and engineer Bill Chappell, who believes he is very close to cracking the electronic voice phenomena code. And we're going to be doing some breakthrough experiments at this event. If you'd like to find out more about that and you'd like to be a part of the event, go to darknessradio.com. Click on our events tab to find out where you can see me. Meet me throughout the year at fascinating locations all around the world. Stay tuned. We're going to begin with your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. I'll be back again with you tomorrow night. We got a very special show lined up for you. This is a creeper. I'm going to tell you, fair warning, this one's going to make you think. John Cameron is our guest. We're going to talk about Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of, a man with a 66-year-long career. Did a deal with the devil ensure his success? We'll find out more about that tomorrow night. Let's go to phone lines right now. Our guest for the evening, Bill Murphy. You can find out more information about Bill and his documentaries at ghosttown.tv. That's ghosttown.tv. Let's go to west of the Rockies, Tammy in Yuma, Arizona. Welcome to Coast. What would you like to talk about?
Yes, gentlemen. You said something about a EVP recording with another recorder and not an investigator in the room?
Yes.
Yes, that has been done. I saw it on one of the ghost hunting shows. Actually, Ghost Adventures with Zach Bagans has done it before, and they got positive responses.
Well, and that's fascinating. Do we get better response when there is a human component, a human element that might work as a biological battery for the experience, or do they, you know, will they exist and be recordable with or without us? I mean, obviously, Tammy, there are recordings and closed-circuit TV and security monitors that are picking up paranormal activity when there's no one around all the time. There's video of it that shows up constantly. You know, the one that was just recently at some shop where they could see things throwing themselves off the shelves. I'm blanking out right now. Tim, the ghosts... story that they did on Ghost Adventures not too long ago where they were out in Long Island, New York, and they were at a bar. I'm asking our engineer here. Yeah, and there's video footage there from the bar where while the waitresses and bartenders are serving people at the bar, you see glasses flinging themselves off the shelf at the bartenders from a sitting still position to flight. And there, nobody's paying attention. Nobody's feeding it directly, trying to make communication with spirits, and they're getting activity. So I do believe that EVP could be easily collected, and we've had that happen before when nobody's in the room or trying. But I just wonder if it's more successful when there's a human element involved
Most of the times that they did it, they were successful. The reason they were doing it is because they were in a foreign country, they didn't speak the language, and they had somebody else record the questions in the language of the country that they were in. And then they got the responses. And more times than not, they would end up with responses than not responses.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling in and weighing in, Tammy. Appreciate you being with us. Wild card one, Gary in Sacramento. Welcome to Coast.
Thank you for taking my call, Dave and Bill.
Hey, Gary.
Yes, another great, provocative, coast-to-coast topic.
Well, thank you very much.
My question is, could these phenomena you have been discussing be related to the fact that not too long ago, we bent light rays with the power of the human mind at Princeton University. Again, thank you very much.
What do you think about that, Bill? What's your take?
I think it drives the point home even further. And once you start talking about light rays, you're talking about photons. And when you get into the quantum world, it's all the rules of the macro world that we can see and walk through and knock on a desk and everything. None of those rules apply, because in the quantum world, solid particles change their behavior from a particle to a wave. It's referred to as the duality of matter. That doesn't happen in the world that we experience when we're in a room or a building. You know, you're not going to have any alchemy type effects where a substance will change from one to the other. But in the quantum world, the properties dramatically change, and they are altered under observation by humans. And so your caller is bringing up a really good point. And it's not just Princeton University that's noted this, but you know, it's being done in many laboratories around the world. So yes, on a quantum level, it's happening. And it may be happening in such a subtle way in the macro world, the world that we experience and can feel, that it's just hard to notice some of these changes that can occur when humans are interjecting themselves in the environment through observation or even emotional desires.
Well, and when you can take into consideration as well that you've got all of these subtleties, all these different energies going on, and then the random number generators that have been placed around the world, and how they seem to start to notice and take effect prior to global consciousness being aware of a certain situation. I know the death of Michael Jackson was one of the most profound responses that the random number generators got. And again, that was before, I guess, consciously we knew about this going on, but it had an impact, didn't it?
It certainly did. Those random number generators, For those that are not familiar with them, just think of an electronic coin flipper, and it's always 50-50. And so if you have a baseline and you're looking at the average, it's going to be, you know, averaging plus one, minus one, maybe a couple of ones and a couple of minus ones. You get these slight deviations from this randomness. And what it's doing is actually, again, it's using a quantum detector. It's measuring the noise generated through an electron stream. And so it's very reliable, the prediction of it. And in the case that you're talking about, before there's an event that has a global emotional impact, they've noted that there are anomalous readings, a huge deviation from chance, huge on the order of not just hundred thousands to one, but millions to one. By chance, you would get a number of these generators that are deviating from expected statistics.
And they're separated around the world. It's not like they're all in one area that they may be influenced by whatever electromagnetic flux might be taking place, or solar flare may be affecting that one parcel. I mean, these are spread out around the world, yet they all seem to have that spooky element, as Einstein referred to, right, where they are connecting and they are all sensing these things.
Yeah, the actual phrase Einstein uses, spooky action at a distance. They are all over the world. As a matter of fact, it's ironic that we bring it up. I have one here with me in my hotel room. I have one here because I'm at a conference where the topic is thought forms. If I can just very quickly mention, it's the ghostfiles.tv is hosting it, and they're taking this study to another level, which maybe if there's a chance, I'll talk about that further.
We'll talk about that when we return. We'll continue taking your calls. Stay tuned. We've got more Coast to Coast coming up right after this. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. Our guest, Bill Murphy, is spending the time here with us answering your questions in this hour. You can check out more about our guest at ghosttown.tv. That's ghosttown.tv. Bill Murphy, you are out at an expo, at a conference right now. Is this something that's still open to the public if they want to join you tomorrow?
Yes, it certainly is. Virginia City, Nevada. It's an event hosted by theghostfiles.tv. Not associated with that website, but those are the organizers, and their topic is thought forms. They sort of have taken what we've been talking about, and they produce a piece based on them traveling around the country, looking at the similarity to what they call the Lady in White. Because it seemed like all these different towns have a Lady in White or a Lady in Gray sighting, which becomes part of the local lore, and they have been posing the question, is this related to thought forms but on a much larger scale? Kind of like what we were talking about before with Slender Man. And so they did a piece about it. And so tomorrow they're going to be actually showing it. I haven't seen it. But that's what this conference is. And so, yes, anybody in the area, come on by. Virginia City, Nevada, and they have tickets available. I don't know how many are left, but it's a great event.
Where should they go if they come to Virginia City, Nevada?
It's at the Washoe Club, the old Washoe Club.
Oh, great. Yeah, I love the Washoe Club.
Yeah, I mean, we all know people that are there. Debbie Constantino is there and a bunch of people that we all know. And so it's a good event. It's a really good group that's there. And it's all about what we're talking about tonight. That's why the timing was really good, Dave, to be in your show, because I've been knee-deep in preparing for this event. And it's funny, you're asking questions that are so relevant to what's going to be covered tomorrow. So come on by, folks, anybody that's nearby.
And what's the website one more time so people can look up information?
Oh, that's nice to ask. It's all one word, theghostfiles, plural, .tv. Theghostfiles.tv.
All right. Check it out if you'd like to be a part of that. Let's go. We'll grab one more call before the break. Wild card line to Walter in Eatonville, Washington. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Hello, guys. Thanks for taking my call. And I'm glad you mentioned the responsibilities we have when it comes to apparitions. It seems to me that our responsibility would be to contact holy apparitions. I mean, that's powerful apparitions that, I realize most people say, well, we try to contact holy spirits like Mary or Jesus or whatever, and there's going to be imposters, evil spirits that will be able to impersonate the good spirits. But the thing seems to me, if those evil spirits, if we try to contact a holy spirit and an evil spirit is able to override that, then we're all doomed anyway. So it seems to me our responsibility would lie to, if nothing else, try to contact Holy Spirit. Because, like, look at the apparition that happened at Fatima. 75,000 people saw that. The sun was moving in the sky. People were healed. And that's a powerful apparition. If we could contact those kind of people, that'd be saving the world, it would seem to me.
It's a valid point, Walter, that you're bringing. And I know, speaking for myself and certainly as I know Dave, we're very mindful and very respectful of that very thing, of always exercising, caution and awareness that whatever we do carefully. We don't want to offend anybody, nor do we want to expose anybody to anything that could be, have malice. So,
but why would you be afraid of something so good? I mean, it seems like that's all. The holiest prayer of the Catholic Church, the Hail Mary, is an apparition talking to Mary, a human. The Holy Spirit in the Catholic religion is always wants to be contacted by us. Mary said the world could be saved if people would devote themselves to her apparition or her spirit. It seems that in olden times, before people were terribly evil, angels and apparitions appeared all the time. And now they don't, because that's the last thing. I mean, everybody's so corrupt, they don't want to speak to an angel or a holy apparition. So
that may not necessarily be the case, Walter. The other thing you have to remember is, if we're going to talk theology in the biblical perspective, is that it says right in the Bible that Satan and his minions will appear as angels of light, that they'll appear to be these beautiful visages, and they'll try to lead us, and actually their path is the destructive path, and that the only one true way is through God or through Jesus, and that we don't need to go through angels and saints and things to communicate. So I think that there's something to be said for, if you're going to buy into the theistic version of everything, that, it's still that you need to be careful no matter where you are and what you're doing, because we still don't know what's on the other side of the door. We don't know who we're communicating with and what the information is that we're getting or why we're getting that. Thank you for calling, Walter. We're going to take another break. We'll come back. We've got more Bill Murphy, more Coast to Coast AM right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader, along with me, Bill Murphy. And we're taking your calls this evening. First-time caller line, Chris in Cleveland. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Great show, guys.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boris, and I've actually been working on a case study for the afterlife at pursuitoftheparanormal.com. And I pride myself in getting lengthy conversations with spirits. And there have been numerous times when I ask the questions, are you just wandering through, or do you have no affiliation with this location? And I do get the confirmation of yes on my K2 meter. Now, in the case of the Peter ghost and the Jackie ghost you were talking about earlier, it seems to me that these spirits could have been just wandering through. And by seeking attention, they assume the roles of these ghosts. Do you think that instead of being topo-type spirits, they could be just wandering spirits?
Dave, can I jump in?
Yeah, please.
Chris, that's actually something that we did address that some of the criticisms aimed at, like myself and others who are engaged in this sort of research where you're looking to see if you can create a thought form, was that the possibility exists that, well, maybe it's not a thought form of your own creation. This is a masquerade opportunity by what you called a wandering spirit, just to use your terminology. So, I don't think we've been able to really identify in any sort of true sense of the word the origin of the communication. You know, we take an action, and they say try to create a thought form, you get a result, but it raises all kinds of additional questions, including what you just posed.
And the thing is, too, spirits are opportunists, or this energy is opportunist. I know you talked a few minutes ago, Bill, about Mark and Debbie Constantino and their EVP specialists. They're able to obtain EVP in most places that they go, and I've been there with them at the Washoe Club in Virginia City, where I've seen them get some of the most impressive A and B level electronic voice phenomena I've ever heard. And it's interesting because they will also do EVP work with inanimate objects, dolls, antiques, things like that, to see if there's an energy attached to it. And I posed that question. I said, well, Debbie, how do you know that you're not just this ghost that wants to communicate is going to say, okay, well, if you're going to talk to a ketchup bottle, I'll answer you and be there because I want to be heard. How do we know that? And she said, you know, that's the thing. We don't know. And that's why when you see people on eBay selling haunted dolls and, you know, giving you this legend and lore and you buy it and we can't guarantee that the ghost will come with it, it's because there may be no ghost associated with that item just because they collected electronic voice phenomena or some type of, evidence. It may have been that the energy was interested in that piece and that's why it appeared haunted. But, you know, you could send that doll on and it just moves over to the statue of the moose, you know, 2 feet over on the other shelf and it becomes the new interest for them. So, I don't know. This is so fascinating because every question begets a new question, as you said earlier.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's more than one question that it unleashes. It's like, okay, look, this process is working. We can have a really controlled session. And I've done this with my wife, where we put a digital recorder between us. We're looking at each other. We're in a sealed environment, very quiet location. We ask a series of questions, and we're watching each other's mouths, be sure that nobody is accidentally whispering to themselves even. And then we play it back, and there's a third voice on there. Now, what we've done is proven that electronic voice phenomena occurs, but we have not proven the origin for that voice. It's just the phenomena is happening. So it's the puzzle just gets deeper.
All right, let's grab another call. We've got, I believe it's Michael in Houston on the East of the Rockies line. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing tonight?
Doing great. Thank you for calling in. What did you want to ask?
Well, I've just been real curious lately. What if you could create your, like, the custom thought forms and so forth, could you create one that could interface with a computer and maybe run things like Jarvis from Iron Man?
There has been, if correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, but there's been some, and I know Mark Macy, I think, had some research on this. There have been computers where they've been finding files, and there are messages typed into these files. Sometimes there's random letters and patterns, but then you'll see words throughout it. And as you look at the words and follow them through, there are full, complete messages in this random pattern that seems to appear in many different computer systems.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you have to start breaking it down like that to extrapolate the information, then you got to be a little cautious because you may be breaking it down in a way that adheres to your native language, for example. So if you've got a bunch of letters, let's just use a Ouija board as an example because it's simpler to visualize than computer files. You've got the alphabet and you've got numbers. The planchet is moving and it's stopping. If somebody is writing down everything that's stopping on, and now you've got a whole series of letters and numbers, and then you start trying to put dividing lines, divide it up and go, oh, okay, here's one word. Oh, okay, here's another word. And now you can try to conform it to a language you're most familiar with. And that I use that as an actual example because we did that. We did it just as for the heck of it. Had a Ouija board session. We were getting a lot of planchet moving. And I know that the ideomotor response is usually what people attribute the moving of the planchet on. It's the muscles moving involuntarily. But regardless, we got a series of letters, and it seemed to be totally random to us. It made no sense. The answers, apparent answers to questions based on the movement. Well, the wife of the person that was sitting with us is Russian. And so it made sense to her when she looked at all these, to us, random letters. These were Russian language for her. So she rewrote the separating lines to go, no, this is not illogical. This is totally logical, and here's what it means in Russian. So we were kind of surprised by that outcome. So that's the only danger of trying to make sense out of randomness.
And I get what you're saying, too, in the sense, right, of if we can create and we have the ability to bring to life these deals, could we give it a consciousness and have it run? But there's never been any evidence at this point, Michael, except for what was done with Spiricom. But again, there's a lot leading you to believe that that could have been hoaxed as well. There's some recordings out there that show that the Spiricom communication may have been manipulated through a voice modulator. But there has been no real specific evidence to prove that we can contain an intelligence and it's that it's there at all times, like a Jarvis from the Iron Man movies. But thank you very much for calling in and being a part of the show this evening. Let's go to Wildcard Line 3. We've got Brad in Wheeling, West Virginia. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. I was just wondering if any thought has ever been put into testing and or classifying the investigators themselves. As in, my biggest thing is I'm not very skeptical concerning the different things that are out there, spirituality and spirits and such. But my main skepticism is on the investigators. Just like you said with your experiment, that if you have somebody and you give them something to what to look for and they found it, maybe that has something to do with the fact that maybe they are possessed themselves, that maybe they can be a hoax manipulator, or maybe they are just better at finding stuff than anybody else.
He's bringing up a good point, Dave, and I think you just sort of addressed that with Spiricom, where, like Dr. Rourke, who you and I have both spoken to, Dr. Stephen Rourke, you have people that say that, okay, you had results in Spiricom, but then when you look a little deeper, it appears that it could have been hoaxed. And so I think most people do cast a critical eye on the investigators themselves, and even if it's not intentional hoax, there's what's called the file drawer effect, and that's when you have a researcher that wants to present evidence that supports his hypotheses, so they'll ignore and hide experiment results that don't conform to their theories. They just want to show what sort of confirms what they're theorizing. So it can, yeah, you do have to look at the investigators and researchers closely, always.
And that, too, Brad, is why a lot of us like to go into a location free of information. And a lot of people think that's an ignorant way to go. But it's known as front-loading. And, if you tell me up front that this is what takes place in this location, it makes it harder for me to go and invalidate, because I am going in with expectations and I'm setting that intention to have that experience. Whereas I like to go into a location and I like, believe it or not, I like to be silent when I investigate with people, because I like to investigate and go into a room, do my EVP sweep, move on. If I have an experience, I make notes of it. And I recommend that people bring notebooks with them and not communicate directly during the investigation unless there's a moment of fear, panic, something that they need to address immediately. Otherwise, then once we get out, we all sit down and the notebooks are open. There is no just, oh yeah, I forgot to write this down. If you didn't write it down, it didn't happen. It didn't exist. That way we can actually look at the data collected by individual investigators who had no prior knowledge of what we were going in for. Then if I go into a room and I collect an EVP of what sounds like a little boy giggling and the sound of a bouncing ball, and Bill Murphy walks in with psychic John Edwards, and John says, Bill, I'm picking up that there's a little boy in this room, and he's got a round red rubber ball in his hands, and he's smiling at us, and he looks perplexed, like he wants us to play. And then the next team comes in and they sense nothing. You know, if you've got some of these independent researchers that are able to corroborate the same situation and have that, it makes the evidence a little bit stronger. But even that starts to then open up a whole new Pandora's box. We did an investigation here in Minnesota where I brought two independent psychics in without letting them know what was going on. And I brought one psychic through the house, and he gave us a full reading of the house and then stopped in the kitchen and said, there's a little girl here. Her name is Emily. She's dressed like this, and she's looking at the candy on the table, and she wants it. And the house homeowner knew of all of these different ghosts, but wasn't familiar with the story of this little girl named Emily. Well, we left and we brought the other psychic in without telling her anything. She walked around. She didn't get any of the same information. We got into the kitchen. She stopped on a dime in the exact same spot. And she said, I see a little girl. Her name is Emily. She looks like this. She's saying this, and she wants the candy on the table. Now, was she truly picking up on the spirit of a little girl, or did she pick up on the impression that was left there? A psychic scar, if you will, that was left there by the psychic before her. And that's where the differentiation line comes in. How do we start to separate this? How do we actually cull this as relatable data? And I think that's why there is such a high reward from the James Randi Foundation and organizations like that of $1 million to prove the paranormal. We may be able to prove that something occurs, but we can't prove that it is in fact paranormal or just part of our normal environment. I mean, we've all walked into the room, and Bill, you can attest to this. You walk into the room after somebody's had a fight. You didn't know they had a fight, but you can feel that palpable feeling in the air, and it leaves that energy like hanging in the balance.
It certainly does.
And when you've got that kind of experience, it's very easy to see and relatable that in a paranormal way, you might be running into that same exact kind of situation. We're going to continue taking your calls. Bill Murphy's going to stay with us for the next hour. We've got an interesting talk. We're going to talk to him a little bit about one of his experiments and a piece of equipment he's developing right now. Stay tuned. More Coast to Coast continues right after this.